this is very new technology. You can heat it and melt the water, and that will liberate the methane.
Federal and state energy officials partner to explore a new energy source in Alaska, methane hydrates. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 2nd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a look at the problem of AIDS in Alaska.
We are diagnosing people late. That's the thing that worries me the most.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
The state of Alaska is looking for partners to research a new source of natural gas called methane hydrates. It could bring in new revenue for the state far down the road, but some environmentalists worry the risk of releasing that much methane is too great. APRN's Ann Hillman has more.
Methane hydrates are methane gas that's trapped in ice crystals in the subsurface of the ocean floor and in the permafrost. Tests by the U.S. Geological Survey in 2012 in Alaska showed that the resource exists on the North Slope, but no one has commercially extracted methane hydrates anywhere in the world. The state's director for the Division of Oil and Gas, Bill Barron, says the state and the Federal Department of Energy are working together to research the potential in Alaska.
That's why we're doing these tests, is this is very new technology. You can heat it and melt the water, and that will liberate the methane. There is a way to use carbon dioxide to exchange the carbon dioxide for the methane within the ice and liberate the methane and use it for CO2 sequestration.
Barron says producers can use many of the same types of drills and well casings used in standard oil and gas drilling. But because methane hydrates are stored in the earth in a different way from typical natural gas, they need to research ways to release it safely and without melting the permafrost.
You're trying to strike that balance between how much recovery you get with what the impact is. And right now, we don't think the impact is going to be at all substantial. We think that just a few degrees is actually maybe enough to liberate the methane.
Meaning that the permafrost column will stay intact. Barron says this theory is based on research and on evidence from wells that have already struck and recovered some methane hydrates. But Richard Charter says producing methane hydrates could be very risky. Charter is a senior fellow with the Ocean Foundation and has been on the Department of Energy's Methane Hydrate Advisory Committee for 10 years. He says the main risk is a giant blowout that could release significant amounts of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, into the atmosphere.
Are we going to trigger a release that we can't control of natural gas, particularly in the ocean, that we can't shut off at a time when global warming is a problem and then further accelerate global warming?
Charter says drilling onshore is safer than drilling offshore, where the risk is triggering a subsea landslide along with a release of methane. But either way, he says it's different from conventional gas drilling because melting the hydrates leads to geological instability. He says the development of methane hydrates is at the point where researchers and industry players have to get it right.
With hydrates, we're about where Thomas Edison was when he had his early light bulbs. Some of Edison's early light bulbs blew up. So when you're in the experimental phase of something with as large a scale of potential risk as hydrate exploitation it certainly appears to have, you want to be extra careful because when you're learning is when you can have very large accidents.
State and federal energy experts will be meeting with industry representatives in Denver on December 11th to see who wants to partner with the government to conduct the research and development work. Charter says industry interest is based on methane's potential for being the next big energy resource.
If you could get a sufficient quantity of it to make it economically exportable and export, by export I mean Asia, as a market, then all of a sudden it's a game changer for Alaska.
Methane extracted from hydrates can be transported along with natural gas from conventional sources, either in a gas line or as LNG on a tanker. Japan is the furthest along with methane hydrate research. The country drilled and extracted the resource from an offshore well in March. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
A survey of oil company managers and executives has given Alaska poor marks for its business climate. The annual report by the Fraser Institute, a conservative Canadian think tank, stacks Alaska up against other states and countries in an effort to develop a, quote, policy perception index. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the respondents weren't kind to the 49th state.
The survey asked about 16 factors, including taxation, environmental regulation, political stability, and security. Nearly 900 oil and gas industry professionals responded. Alaska came in 79th place, right in the middle. You might see that as a glass-half-full result, but Pakistan wasn't far behind, and it put Alaska just below Tunisia, where a terror attack killed 40 foreign workers at a gas plant in January. Larry Persily, federal coordinator of Alaska Gas Pipeline Projects, notes the survey was conducted between February and May, so it's impossible to say how many respondents were aware the Alaska legislature rolled back taxes on the oil companies in April. Persily says the controversy itself plays a role.
Oil and gas taxes is an emotional issue in Alaska. It's in the news constantly. There's referendums. There are political battles. The industry's aware of that, and that certainly colors industry's perception.
He also points out the report gauges perceptions, not actual conditions. Still, Persily says perceptions can sting.
You don't want that out there. It's toxic, but I think we also have to understand this is a self-reporting survey. It's not a statistically accurate sample. So, you know, we should be concerned about it, but this shouldn't ruin our day.
Bob Pulaski of the State Oil and Gas Division says the legislature made several changes this year that makes Alaska more friendly to industry. It provided flexibility to give companies more time to develop their leases, and it eased some of the permitting requirements, not to mention the tax rollback. Former Anchorage Mayor Jack Roderick is working to get that repealed. He says the survey is an industry PR tool.
They're speaking for their corporate interest.
The industry named Oklahoma its favorite place this year. At the bottom of the pile, Venezuela. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Federal responders say it's too early to know what caused a commuter plane to crash in remote southwest Alaska, killing 4 people and injuring another 6 on board. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the crash of the Hagelin Aviation Cessna 208 1 mile southeast of the village of St. Mary's on Friday night. The pilot and 3 passengers were killed and 6 others passengers survived. 5 were listed in fair condition Monday at Anchorage hospitals. The 6th survivor has been treated and released. Investigators with the NTSB and the Federal Aviation Administration arrived Sunday to the wreckage site 470 miles west of Anchorage. Clint Johnson, chief of the NTSB's Alaska Regional Office, says the goal is to document the wreckage before moving the plane to Anchorage or Bethel. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an emotional reunion for a homesick Alaska basketball player.
I just saw my mom at the end of the tunnel, and it was, at that point, it was just unreal for me. I was shaking.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Primera Alaska won't increase premium rates for Alaskans who decide to extend their plans for another year. The company previously had to cancel plans that didn't meet the requirements of the Affordable Care Act for 5,400 members in the state. Last month, President Obama allowed insurance companies to continue offering those plans through 2014. Primera Alaska spokesperson Eric Erling says the company decided to forego the normal rate increases given the short timeline.
It just made more sense to continue plans at their current rates. So the only time if a member is on an individual plan that's being extended that they would see their rate change if they move into a new age band during the year. Otherwise, the rate would stay the same for their plan as long as they stay on it through 2014.
Erling says members will automatically stay on their current plans unless they call Primera to cancel. He says members can buy an Affordable Care Act plan instead on the healthcare.gov marketplace anytime before March 31st. That's the only way to qualify for a subsidy to purchase insurance. Erling says there's no way to predict how many people will go that route.
The big question is, is someone eligible for a subsidy? And if they're eligible for a subsidy, especially if it's a significant one, they may want to go to the exchange and buy one of the new plans to be able to access that subsidy. But for those folks that are not eligible for a subsidy, or very little subsidy, staying on their current plan might make the most financial sense.
Moda Health is also planning to extend plans for customers in Alaska who had their insurance canceled under the Affordable Care Act. The company says it doesn't know yet if rates will increase. December 1st was World AIDS Day. The annual observance started in 1988 to increase awareness and prevention of the disease. The United Nations estimates that more than 35 million people worldwide were living with HIV in 2012. About 70% were in sub-Saharan Africa, compared to 4% in North America. KTOO's Rosemarie Alexander takes a look at that problem in Alaska.
Aldwin McQuistion is living with AIDS.
I'm just not going to let it get me down.
The 47-year-old Juneau man was first diagnosed with HIV in 1999.
It was my own fault, pure and simple. I was promiscuous and should have paid more attention to things.
HIV stands for human immunodeficiency virus that attacks certain immune system cells called CD4 or T cells. It can destroy so many cells that the body no longer can fight infections or disease, leading to AIDS, or acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. Dr. Beth Saltonstall is medical director for HIV/AIDS clinical services at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
AIDS is not a separate disease. It's the end result of having chronic HIV infection.
The state requires that all HIV and AIDS diagnoses be reported to public health. That's been nearly 1,500 HIV cases over the last 30 years. Of the 51 reported in 2012, 35% already had a diagnosis of AIDS.
So we are diagnosing people late. That's the thing that worries me the most, that people are positive, they don't know they're positive, and they're unwittingly passing the virus to others.
Alaska statistics track those nationwide. According to state epidemiology, men who have sex with men remain at greatest risk for exposure to HIV. Saltonstall says of the 51 HIV cases last year,
66% were male, which means that a third of them were female. That's more than we used to see back in the earlier days. You know, it used to be totally male dominant. So we're seeing more women, heterosexual transmission.
Most of the Alaska cases are in the Anchorage and Matanuska-Susitna area, but it is a statewide problem. Southeast Alaska accounts for about 5% of the cases since 1982. Phoebe Rohrbacher is Southeast Services Coordinator for the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, or 4AIS, with headquarters in Anchorage. The statewide organization helps clients with rent, transportation, medical needs, medication, substance abuse, and mental health counseling. It all begins with the test, which Rohrbacher can administer in her Juneau office.
It's a mouth swab, and it's the HIV rapid test, and it takes only 20 minutes to get the results.
Heather Davis is director of the statewide 4AIS program. She says Alaska is considered a low-incidence state for HIV/AIDS, which means it gets less funding for prevention. The majority of money flows from the federal government to the state and drives testing, which is focused on high-risk populations. Much of Rohrabacher's time is spent talking about the disease and prevention. 4A's teaches classes, distributes condoms, and offers a syringe exchange. Intravenous drug users that share needles are very susceptible to HIV because of the blood that stays in the syringe.
You can pass it on through 4 bodily fluids: blood, semen, breast milk, and vaginal fluids. And so a woman who is pregnant can pass it on to her baby in utero or through breastfeeding. The baby's born HIV negative.
Rohrabacher says more and more babies are being born without the disease to HIV positive mothers due to medication that prevents the transmission to the baby. Davis says 1 in 5 people who have HIV are unaware of it because they don't have symptoms.
When you're sleeping with somebody, you're sleeping with everybody that they ever slept with. So that's why it's so important to get a test.
Dr. Saltonstall says testing is absolutely imperative, even for people who don't think they are at risk.
The CDC has recommended that everybody between the ages of 13 and 64 be offered to know their HIV status at least once.
Aldwin McQuistion didn't know he had HIV until a cold developed into a more serious infection his body couldn't fight. Now he is living with AIDS, but he's not dying from it. It's controlled by medication.
I know we're all going to die sooner or later, but I'm not going to die any sooner than anybody else because of this, as far as I believe, anyway. And right now, I'm only on one medication.
When he was first diagnosed, McQuistion took 14 medications a day. And 30 years ago, when someone received an HIV-positive diagnosis, it was a death notice. Dr. Saltonstall says HIV-AIDS research is now focused on a vaccine and cure. And she believes at some point, the disease will be conquered. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. And by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com.
A misjudgment of just a few dozen yards in the placement of a small house on a remote part of Kodiak Island over 30 years ago will likely result in a family's hopes, dreams, and history literally going up in smoke. The family doesn't live on their homestead on Dry Spruce Bay full-time anymore, but they are heartbroken at the prospect of losing it. KMXT's Jay Barrett has the story of Tom and Grace Malmberg.
In 1973, after Tom and Grace Malmberg were married in Yuzinki, they moved to nearby Dry Spruce Bay, a small protected cove on the north end of Kodiak Island. For 10 years, while Tom fished and worked for the Port Bailey cannery, the couple started a family in a small frame shack not far away. After buying 10 spruce-covered acres a mile and a half across the bay, their small home was loaded atop a makeshift raft and towed to its current location. There, the small house became a sizable home, as it was added on to piece by piece over the years. The family grew as well to eventually include 6 children. 3 of them, Tom delivered right there.
All my kids, my wife taught them school out there through the 9th grade.
All the kids went on to college and successful careers in teaching, forestry, engineering, medicine, and the law. 39-year-old Mika is the oldest of the Malmberg children. She remembers well when she was 9 and her dad floated their house to the shore opposite Port Bailey. Today, she's a patent attorney with a firm in Los Angeles.
I live in L.A. Bizarre environment. Nobody really understands where I come from.
It's unlikely that after this winter, the homestead will even be there for any of the Malbergs to visit, even if they get permission from the owners to set foot on the land. That's because their home of 30 years, the storage sheds, freezer van, banya, even the outhouse, were mistakenly placed about 70 yards outside their property line on less than a fifth of an acre of land owned by the Afognak Native Corporation. But this is not a story about a land dispute. There is no dispute that the Malmbergs misjudged the property line when they built their home, and legally, the matter was settled in February. An out-of-court agreement came after a Fogdak sued the Malmbergs in 2012, threatening to stick them with the cleanup bill for removing all traces that they had ever lived on the shores of Dry Spruce Bay. The specter of those cleanup costs, according to Mika, is what ultimately prompted the Malmbergs to accept a $10,000 buyout, with a Fognak shouldering the removal and cleanup costs.
Eventually, the parties ended up settling, and there's now a judgment on the record, which allows my parents access to the house until, I think it's February of this coming year, 2014. And at that point in time, we're no longer allowed to access the house. And from what I can understand, based on, just historically what's happened, that it's most likely that the house will be burned down.
Naturally, the Malmbergs wanted to save their home. So before and during the lawsuit, they made several offers to a Fognak to settle the matter out of court.
So we proceeded to try to negotiate with the Fognak Native Corporation. You know, we tried to exchange. We own 10 acres of land that abuts where the house is. And so we tried to exchange 5 acres of the timbered property that we have with the small amount that the house sits on. The Fognak Native Corporation refused. We offered to purchase the land outright. They also refused.
Well, I guess I don't really quite understand how they turned down such a, a piece of property that absolutely has no trees on it for a 5-acre parcel with hundreds of spruce trees that have never been cut.
Fognak Native Corporation did not respond to requests for comment for this story, but in court documents, they point out that their corporation land is critical to preserving the Aleutic culture of the northern Kodiak archipelago, and that it's their policy to keep its native lands for subsistence and recreational use by its shareholders. So, facing a 366-day deadline from the time of the agreement, Tom took as much leave time this summer as he could and went back to Dry Spruce Bay to determine what could be salvaged from their home of so many years. It turned out that moving a lifetime of memories for a family of 8 was a more daunting task than he imagined.
If I would have had more time, I could have moved everything off and managed to get on my property. But it's definitely a job. We checked with a salvage company, and to hire somebody to do it was going to be $70,000, $80,000.
It's so hard to think of everything that, just getting burned down. And just, talking to my dad and hear him. I mean, my dad's not a very emotional guy, and to hear him just choke up. And, I mean, he told me when I talked to him when he was in Alaska, he said, my dream is gone. And it was really hard to hear.
Though he and Grace accepted the Fognak buyout offer, Tom still holds out some hope that his family's home and belongings might still be saved. I'm Jay Barrett.
It's expensive to travel in and out of Alaska, and for Puni Timu, that price tag has kept her from seeing her parents for more than a year and a half. Puni went to Kodiak High School, where she was a star player on the girls' basketball team. She graduated and signed on with the University of Jamestown's basketball team in North Dakota, and it's been a long time since Puni last saw her parents, and her teammates recently decided to do something extraordinary to bring the two together. KMXT's Brianna Gibbs has more.
Puni moved to Jamestown, North Dakota in August 2012. Her dad dropped her off at school, so the last time she saw her mom was when she left Kodiak more than a year and a half ago. She worked in Minnesota over the summer and spent holidays with friends from the University of Jamestown. But this fall, the absence from Kodiak and her family really started to weigh on her. Greg Ulin coaches the women's basketball team at Jamestown and said Puni's teammates could tell Puni was pretty homesick and decided to take matters into their own hands.
player approached me with an idea that we should all kind of pitch our money together and buy her mom a plane ticket so she can come to North Dakota and surprise her at a game.
The teammate was Hannah Wise, whose mom, Leanne Wise, said she wanted to do something special for Pooney.
You know, my daughter and I are very close, and so being away from my daughter for a year would be extremely difficult. So I understood it, and Hannah was so adamant about, we got to get her mom here and we got to surprise her.
The team got in touch with Pooney's mom, Sina Timu, who said she couldn't believe the thoughtful gift her daughter's friends wanted to give their family.
And then I was shocked when they said that they're bringing my fare to come down to see Pooney. So I was shocked when I heard that, and I said, oh, what am I going to do now? You know, there's no way for me to turn these girls down. I said, okay.
She kept the secret for 2 months and only told her husband and the kids that are still at home in Kodiak.
Every time Pooney called, they pretended nothing's going to happen.
The actual night when we drove to Moorhead with her, her mom all along kept saying, oh, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous. My hands are shaking. And then the actual event when Pooney came out, and she just was beside herself. It was just so cool.
This was a JV game, so we had a bunch of our varsity kids were there, a bunch of other boosters, a bunch of other parents. There was about 25 or 30 people there, so we were all pretty excited for her. We all knew what was going on. Pooney was the only one who didn't know. So we snuck her mom into the gym. The girls went down to the locker room, and they were coming out for warm-ups, and we kind of formed a tunnel with all these people, and we were clapping and cheering for them. And as she walks through the tunnel, and then she sees her mom, and she screams out, Mom, and then it really hits her that, hey, my mom is here.
I just saw my mom at the end of the tunnel, and it was, at that point, it was just unreal for me. I was shaking. There really was no words that could describe how I felt, especially being away from my mom for so long. I just didn't know what to feel, didn't know what to say. You know, I didn't know whether to push her away or hold her. It didn't register in my head for a while that she was standing right in front of me.
Thanks to Pooney's teammates, Sina was able to stay with Pooney through the Thanksgiving holiday, making it one of the more memorable ones the two have ever shared. I'm Brianna Gibbs.
To see a video of the reunion, go to alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander, from Juno, and Jay Barrett and Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C., and Ann Hillman from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. Calling all Alaskan artists. Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.